All right, so let's jump into a case
Okay.
that really kind of throws a wrench into this whole police chase thing. You know, when does a chase actually become like a legal seizure
Right.
under the Fourth Amendment?
Yeah.
And the case that kind of brings all this stuff to the forefront is California v. Hodari D.
It's a big one.
It went all the way to the Supreme Court.
Back in 1991.
Yeah, back in 91. And it,
Still has people talking about it.
oh, yeah. Still has lawyers arguing today for sure.
Yeah, it's one of those cases that seems so simple.
Like deceptively simple.
Yeah, on the surface,
Right.
yet.
But when you start thinking about it,
You get into the weeds.
I think it's really complicated.
Yeah, when you think about all the different scenarios and what it means for both sides, you know, law enforcement and
On both sides. Yeah.
individual rights.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So to set the scene, we're in Oakland, California,
Okay.
in a known high crime area. Two plainclothes officers are on patrol. When they see a group of young men huddled around a car,
Okay.
what happens next? They spot the officers and they bolt.
They run.
One of them,
Yeah.
Hodari D, and he's about to become the center of this landmark case.
Makes sense.
So as Hodari's running, one of the officers, Officer Pertoso takes off after him.
Okay.
Now, just before Pertoso catches up,
Yeah.
Hodari tosses away what looks like a small rock.
More rock, huh?
That rock, as you might have guessed, turned out to be crack cocaine.
Oh, so we've got a chase. We got discarded drugs.
Yep.
And now the legal question.
Now we've got the legal question.
That's going to have repercussions across the country.
Across the country, yeah. Was Hodari seized the moment the officer started chasing him, or only when he was physically tackled?
That's the question, isn't it?
That's the question. And the timing here is crucial.
Yeah.
Because if he was already seized when he tossed the drugs, that evidence might be thrown out.
Right. That's huge.
So the lower courts were actually split on this. The trial court said the evidence was admissible,
Okay.
but the California Court of Appeal reversed that, saying
Wow.
Hodari was seized the moment he saw the officer running towards him.
Interesting.
So up it went
To the Supreme Court.
to the Supreme Court to
Okay.
settle this whole thing.
To make a decision.
And that's where things get really interesting.
I bet.
Justice Scalia wrote the majority opinion,
Okay.
and he took a pretty strict by-the-book approach. He focused on the historical definition of seizure in common law,
Right.
which basically requires either physical force
Okay.
or a clear submission to authority.
So, kind of straightforward
Yeah.
in a
But
way.
Scalia even used this analogy that I think a lot of legal scholars still talk about today.
Yeah.
He said, imagine you're trying to grab a rock,
Okay.
but it slips out of your hand.
All right.
You haven't actually seized that rock until you have it firmly in your grasp.
Okay.
So if a suspect ignores an officer's command to stop and keeps running,
Yeah.
they haven't been seized
Right.
until there's actual physical contact.
Oh, so
No touch, no seizure,
no
basically.
touch, no seizure.
That analogy makes it sound so straightforward.
Right.
But Justice Stevens wasn't buying it.
Oh, really?
He wrote a dissenting opinion, arguing that a head-on chase like this inherently restricts someone's freedom,
Okay, yeah.
whether there's physical contact or not.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So,
So he's looking at it a different way.
different way, yeah.
Less about the physical,
Less about the physical, more about like
more about just
that
the
it's
feeling of
less I'm being
being
restricted, yeah. So,
It's okay.
okay, so we've got
We've got this fundamental clash
this like,
over what seizure really means
yeah, in the context of a police chase.
in the context of a police chase.
And
Yeah.
then how much weight should be given to the suspect's perception of being seized versus the actual physical act of restraint?
Exactly. And as we'll see, this debate has some pretty big implications for how these cases are handled in court.
I bet it does. The majority opinion in Hodari D. kind of set a new standard, like a two-prong test,
Right.
for determining when a seizure actually happens
Okay.
during a police encounter.
All right.
First, you got the obvious one.
Uh-huh.
Physical restraint by the officer, whether that's grabbing, tackling, or handcuffing the suspect.
Okay, so that one's pretty straightforward.
Right.
But what about that second prong?
That second prong,
Yeah.
it's all about submission to authority.
Mm-hmm.
Even if there's no physical contact, if the suspect clearly submits to the officer's commands or demonstrates that they're yielding to the officer's authority, that can constitute a seizure.
So let's say a suspect is running away, but then throws their hands up in the air when the officer gets close.
Okay.
Would that be considered submission,
Yeah.
even though they haven't been physically touched yet?
That's exactly the kind of nuanced situation that lawyers love to argue about.
Oh, yeah.
It really depends on the specific circumstances,
yeah.
but that scenario that you described could very well be interpreted as submission.
Yeah.
Even without physical restraint.
So this ruling
yeah.
has shifted the landscape in a way that makes those split-second decisions during a police chase even more crucial.
Huge.
Both for the suspect
right.
and for how the case is handled in court.
Right, because now anything discarded by the suspect before they're physically restrained or submit to authority is generally considered fair game.
Oh, wow.
For the prosecution, it's almost like a finder's keeper's rule for evidence.
Finder's keepers in the legal world.
Right.
That's a pretty impactful way to think about it.
Yeah, and it's a significant shift from earlier cases dealing with police pursuits.
Okay.
There was a case before Hoderi D.
Uh-huh.
Michigan D. Chesternut.
I remember that one.
Where the Supreme Court suggested that just a police car following a suspect could be intimidating enough to be considered a seizure even without any physical contact.
Hmm.
But Hoderi D. raised that bar significantly.
Wow. So for our listeners who are defense attorneys,
how can they use the Hoderi D. ruling to their advantage?
Hmm.
It seems like it might be tougher to get evidence thrown out now.
It definitely makes things more challenging, but there are still arguments to be made.
Okay.
The key is to focus on that submission element.
Right.
Defense attorneys need to be really sharp at analyzing the suspect's behavior.
Yeah.
Did they freeze when the officer shouted at them?
Yeah.
Did they slow down or change direction in a way that indicates they were yielding to the officer's authority?
So even subtle actions could be interpreted as submission.
Exactly.
Potentially leading to the suppression yeah. of any evidence obtained afterward.
That's right. And for prosecutors,
yeah.
Hoderi D. reinforces the importance of documenting all the details of the encounter.
Mm.
Body camera footage becomes incredibly valuable in these cases because it can provide a clear record of the suspect's actions and whether they truly submitted to authority before discarding any evidence.
It sounds like this case has really raised the stakes for both sides when it comes to police chases and the evidence they can use in court.
Absolutely. Hoderi D. is a stark reminder of just how much those split-second decisions matter and how the smallest details can have a huge impact on the outcome of a case.
This case also brings up some interesting questions about what happens when a suspect doesn't explicitly surrender,
okay,
but also doesn't necessarily keep running.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what if Hoderi had tripped and fallen while he was running?
That's where things get really tricky.
Yeah, would that fall be considered accidental, or could it be interpreted as a form of submission to the officer's authority?
Yeah.
The Hoderi D. ruling doesn't explicitly address that kind of scenario.
Right.
And that's why it continues to be debated in legal circles.
It's a good question.
And I imagine that debate is only going to get more complex as technology advances.
Absolutely.
What happens when we're dealing with police drones or facial recognition software that can track suspects in real time? How does Hoderi D. apply in those situations?
Those are excellent questions and ones that the courts are going to have to grapple with more and more in the coming years. The basic principles of Hoderi D. still apply.
Okay.
But the application of those principles can get really murky when you bring in these new technologies.
Right.
For example, if a suspect is being tracked by a drone, does that constant surveillance create a sense of being seized even if there's no officer physically present?
It sounds like we're heading into a whole new frontier of legal challenges related to police pursuits and the Fourth Amendment.
We are, and cases like Hoderi D., while decided decades ago, are still laying the groundwork for how we're going to navigate those challenges in the years to come.
It really makes you realize how much this seemingly straightforward question, when does a chase become a seizure?
Right.
Has evolved over time and continues to shape the legal landscape.
Yeah, it feels like Hoderi D. just kind of opened this can of worms.
Yeah.
When it comes to these gray areas of the law, these situations where
these edge cases.
Yeah, where it's not so clear cut whether a suspect has actually been seized or not.
It definitely raised more questions than it answered in some ways.
And it forced legal professionals to really scrutinize the details of police encounters.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just about whether there was physical contact,
right,
but also about the suspect's perception of their freedom being restricted.
And that's where it gets tricky, right?
Yeah.
Because perception can be subjective.
Exactly.
What one person sees as a show of authority might not be perceived the same way by someone else.
Precisely. And that's why Hoderi D. has been such a fertile ground for legal debate and interpretation.
Yeah.
It sets a framework, but the application of that framework can be really challenging
right.
in those edge cases where the lines are blurred.
It's almost like Hoderi D. gave us a new lens.
Yeah.
through which to view these police encounters, one that focuses on the subtle interplay between the officer's actions and the suspect's reactions.
That's a great way to put it, and it underscores the importance of careful legal analysis in these cases.
Yeah.
We can't just look at the broad strokes.
Right.
We have to dig into the specifics of each encounter. Mm-hmm. And the body language, the verbal exchanges, the context of the situation to really determine whether a seizure occurred before any evidence was discarded.
It makes you wonder about those hypothetical scenarios that didn't quite make it into the Hodari D ruling.
Right.
Like we talked about Hodari tripping and falling.
Yeah.
But what if he had just hesitated for a moment when the officer yelled at him? Would that be enough to constitute submission, even if he kept running afterward?
That's another great example of the kind of nuance that Hodari D brought to the forefront.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's a question that could be argued either way, depending on the specific facts of the case.
Right.
It's a reminder that these legal battles often come down to the smallest details, those split-second decisions that can have major consequences.
So for all the lawyers and law students listening,
yeah,
Hodari D is clearly a case that you need to know inside and out.
For sure.
It's not just about memorizing the two-pronged test.
Right.
It's about understanding the deeper implications and how those principles can be applied in real-world situations.
Absolutely. And it's a case that keeps evolving as our world changes.
Yeah.
We're now dealing with new technologies, new forms of surveillance, and those are going to bring a whole new set of challenges to the Hodari D framework.
Right. Like, how do we apply those principles to police drones, facial recognition software, predictive policing algorithms?
Those are all really interesting questions.
It's fascinating to think about how a case decided over 30 years ago is still shaping how we approach these cutting-edge issues today.
And that's the power of landmark cases like Hodari D.
Yeah.
They lay the foundation for legal principles that continue to be debated, reinterpreted, and applied in new and unexpected ways as society evolves.
It's a reminder that the law is a live and breathing thing, constantly adapting to the changing world around us.
Yeah.
And cases like Hodari D force us to confront those changes head on.
For sure.
And grapple with the complex questions they raise about individual rights, police power, and the pursuit of justice.
Well said. Hodari D is a case that every legal professional should have in their arsenal, ready to be analyzed, debated, and applied as we navigate the ever-evolving landscape of law enforcement and the Fourth Amendment.
And on that note, we'll wrap up this deep dive into California v. Hodari D.
Hopefully you've gained some new insights and maybe even some new questions to ponder as you continue your legal journey. Until next time, keep exploring.
Keep learning.
Keep questioning. And as always, stay curious.